Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick Radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California.
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope one of those cowboy guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black D. How?
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J.Cat Morris.
You are now listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, March 12th, 2014. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J.Cat Morris. I got some stuff to talk about. Shortly, actually, I'll be joined by my guest, Luke Hawks, and, a lot of stuff to ask him about and talk to him about. So I don't want to get into too much, prior to the interview. So, I guess just to start out, didn't watch WWE again. I seem to be in a severe drought of not giving a shit about that. But, it is what it is. Going into WrestleMania, there's a lot of stuff that, people are excited to be seeing and everything else. One thing I can say is they put up an article, I think earlier today, that was pretty much giving, tons of respect and accolades to everything that Sara Del Rey is doing in developmental over there, training the girls and really helping to shape the women's division. So I thought that was really cool that, they actually wrote a really in-depth and real good article on, just all that she contributes and everything that she's, doing for the women's division as a whole. So, I think that's pretty cool. They kind of kept her in the shadows for a long time, and, she's doing the training. She's doing so much to help the women over there. And, everybody who knows her from the indies knows that, she's got to be the most talented women's wrestler on the planet. Maybe people have arguments, but I can't imagine it's by much because she's just unbelievably talented. And, I don't think she's an unattractive woman whatsoever. And, for whatever reason, they more or less want to keep her behind the scenes and use her for her talents as a trainer, which, I can't blame them for wanting, to use her to help the entire roster rather than just use her to, for one angle or one spot or whatever. But I definitely would love to see her make an actual run on TV because, she's immensely talented. So why not? Let me see. Still waiting on my guest. Let me see. Let me just check this over here. Sorry, just 1 minute. All right. So, yeah, any minute, Luke will be calling in. Let me see what else I got to just run through real quick. Just random things. Sarah Del Rey. I guess I'll, hit the football thing real quick. Lots of movement going on in the NFL. And as far as the Niners go, because, everybody knows that's what I'm focused on, we re-signed our kicker, Dawson, who was absolute money for us all season. So, I was really happy to see that re-signing. We got Blaine Gabbert from the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'm not really sure why. I'm not sure, how desperate we were for a backup quarterback, and he was pretty horrible in Jacksonville. So I just can't imagine, the reasoning behind that. The weird thing there, too, is because Colin is making such like a low base salary because, it was still off of his rookie contract and what he was making there. if he doesn't get his extension before the season, his backup will be making – Blaine Gabbert will be making more than Colin Kaepernick on the 49ers. So, kind of awkward. I would imagine, you'll see a big money extension, and I could really see it no other way. So – definitely look forward to seeing them lock Colin in for a while because that's going to be our guy for a minute. We lost Dante Whitner, which, not really a big fan of, having to lose another safety. The year before, just lost Goldson and then Whitner the next year. I know Whitner was one of those guys that they like to call controversial and he hits too hard and this and that. I mean, a lot of our guys are putting big hits on people. The NFL is fining him and stuff, and he's going to change his name to Hitner and all of this stuff. And I could definitely say I actually narrowly avoided buying his jersey. He was definitely on the list of people I was going to buy his jersey. I actually thought about it, and I said, if he's going to change his name and it's going to say Hitner on the back of the jersey, let me wait until he does that next year, and then I'll get his jersey next year. So it was definitely on my, to get list, and I'm glad I didn't, because then he made the move. So he's now a Cleveland Brown. So a great safety. Like I said, don't like seeing him go. We actually signed Antoine Bethea from the Colts, supposedly a veteran guy over there. I don't know much of his work and what he was doing over there, but supposedly he's pretty good. And we'll see as the season starts and everything, and if this is a suitable replacement. I don't know. I don't know much of the guy's work. Another thing we did, big, controversial or, unsure how this move's going to pan out, but we signed Jonathan Martin. Now, this guy, for those who don't remember, was one half of the big controversy with Richie Incognito. And he was being bullied and all of this thing. And then a lot of people were just saying the guy's a head case and he melted down and he couldn't handle it and this and this. So I don't know, exactly how I feel about us picking that guy up. But, this is more or less his time to rebound and kind of prove himself as a guy who, isn't just a head case and maybe can hang and actually make an impact. San Francisco is not a team that needs a hero right now. So if he's able to fill a spot on the line, put in some work and just consistently put in time, maybe he could prove himself to not be, the bitch that a lot of people got him made out to be. So, hoping for the best there. I think I have my guest online right now. So I'd like to welcome to the show, Luke Hawks.
What's happening? Sorry. I've run a few minutes behind, guys.
Nah, that's all right. No problem. I wanted to have you on. A lot of stuff to ask you and stuff. Figured you'd just get right into it. How'd you get into wrestling?
That's all I ever wanted to do, man. So I just chased it from the time I was a little kid, man. I used to come here and go to these little crap shows around the area and help them put up the ring and hang out. And then eventually when ECW started coming around, I did the same thing with them and got along with those guys and got in with some of those guys and making connections and when I finished high school, moved to California and started training with Vic Grimes. I mean, that's the short story of it, and I can go into details, mm-hmm. but I actually, I mean, if you watch anything or listen to, not to cut your, you know, say your interview short, but if you listen to anyone I do, it's, you know, it's the same question over and over, how'd you get into it? I hate kind of telling it because my story is different than a lot of people's, especially now breaking in. Like, a lot of guys have schools and stuff to go to.
Right.
Like, guys in Philadelphia, the Northeast, they had Georgia, they, you know, California, they got all these stuff in their area. I didn't have anything in my area. I had to literally sleep in my car and drive across country, you know, to go out and struggle to get to chase my wrestling dream. So a lot of guys, mm-hmm. you know, I think nowadays they don't appreciate what they have in their, you know, in the places they got in the area, how lucky they are. It's a shame. I think it's a dying art for some reason. But, maybe not a dying art, but I definitely think that respect of earning your keep in the business is fading away, you know?
Right. But, you know, being especially, as you said, you know, in an area where it wasn't really surrounded with places to train or places to go, what was the thing that actually made you say, hey, you know, I really want to do this and go the extra mile to even, you know, get into it? Because obviously it was a lot harder from where you were.
Well, there was never any other option for me. I mean, I grew up a poor white trash, you know, kid with nothing. You know, I literally came from nothing. I came from mm-hmm. being the only white kid in a black neighborhood. You know, my mom was a drug addict. My dad didn't want nothing to do with me. I went into a boys' home for a few years as a kid. Eventually got adopted at 15. I mean, I literally had nothing. So this was my life out of that. You know, I didn't want anything else. I didn't want to be a regular job. I didn't want to be a fireman. I didn't want to be a police officer. There was nothing I wanted to do except wrestle, and that was my goal from day one. I knew I had, you know, people used to laugh at me all the time. When I told somebody I'm going to be a professional wrestler, I got laughed at constantly. Or, you know, what are you really going to do? What are you really going to do? I'm going to be a pro wrestler. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I chased it at all costs.
All right. Now, at the time, you know, what were your aspirations? Did you see money in it? Did you see, you know, more or less the, you know, the community aspect of it? Or, yeah.
I didn't know any of that, you know. I'm sure money came along with it. I'm sure I thought that you were going to be, you know, that I'd be rich. But at the same time, honestly, when I think about it, I didn't do it for any of those reasons. I did it because I loved it. I still do it because I loved it. Because I love it. I mean, that's why I wrestle. My heart's center. If I went to WWE tomorrow and I signed a multi-million-dollar contract and I was there for 10 or 15 years, I mean, by the time I'd be old, because I'm getting older now, but even when I got off the scene, I'd probably be like Jerry Law, I'd imagine, and still do shows here and there when I can, because, you know, he loves the business. I truly love the business. I can't get enough of the business. Even when I just never once, you know, been a thought in my mind to quit the business, or even when it was tough, even when, you know, things weren't going my way, I never thought about quitting. It's just, this is my life.
When you went out to California, where did you train?
With Vic Grimes. We didn't really have a school. I just knocked on his door. I had his address. I kept in touch with him from the ECW days. And long story short, I went to Philadelphia first. I got screwed over by a guy in Philadelphia. And ended up driving straight from Philly to California and just knocked on Vic's door and said, hey, I came to get trained. And he was like, you're a moron. Because he couldn't believe I just took a chance and drove across country and knocked on his door, and he didn't have a ring or nothing. So we did a lot of training in his house, in his yard. We'd go borrow rings. We'd go to other schools or places in the area that had rings, and we'd go spend time there. Or before a show, we'd get there early and go get in the ring early or stay later. You know, anything we could do to get some training in. And I soaked up a lot of knowledge from Vic, man. He didn't get enough credit for all the knowledge he had. He was known as just that hardcore guy who took those crazy bumps. But, you know, he was really a big guy who could move and who really loved to work with the high flyers at the time. I mean, he loved to work with high flyers. And at the time, I was a high flyer, so we used to have some awesome matches, man. He put some good matches together for us.
All right. Where did you actually get to work, like, your first match at?
My first match was for the Samoans for Big Maddie Rosie from 3 Minute Warning and ECMO. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
What was his name in WWE? What the hell was his name? Umaga in WWE.
Umaga.
So
right.
They used to actually, yeah. I actually started breaking in Louisiana when I was in high school, and I got treated like crap out here. The guy had something by a bunch of fat jerk-offs. Who weren't worth nothing. I knew they weren't worth nothing. They didn't know anything. But they had a ring, and they were running small crap shows. But that was all they had in this area. So I was trying to get in with them. So I got in with them at first, and they treated me like crap. And because I was young, and I'm sure I had a smart mouth on me because I always did. At least I knew that at the same time that these guys were terrible. So they would treat me like crap, and I would talk back to them. And I didn't show these guys any respect because, you know, in my mind, they weren't worth the respect. It was just something for me to get into in the area. It was the only thing I had. So Maddie, who was Rosie on 3-Minute Warning, used to come to some of these shows and say, "Hey man, well, why aren't you wrestling? You know, why are you refereeing on these shows?" And I said, "Well, they don't want to let me wrestle, you know." And I was doing 450s, not that moves matter, but you know, I was doing some high flying stuff and doing stuff these guys would never even do. So Maddie's like, "You got some talent. Why aren't you wrestling?" I'm like, "They won't let me wrestle because you know it would have took away from completely what these guys were doing." So Maddie said, "Why don't you just come to Florida and work some shows for me?" So I went down there and started working with the Armstrongs and the Samoans and those guys and got in with them and eventually until I graduated high school. And then as soon as I graduated high school, I went and got really properly trained from Vic. That's when I jumped in my car. And, you know, I knew if I wanted to succeed in the business, I had to get out of here and get to a better place, someplace where I was respected, someplace where I could really learn from somebody who's been around, somebody who's, you know, made money in the business and somebody who has connections. So that's what I did.
Now, was that your direct link into XPW through Vic?
Yeah, that was my direct link. I got lucky with XPW. They called me. They called Vic, actually. They had a tag team tournament, and they were short on guys. And they were just like, "Hey, is your student, because I used to go with Vic to the shows." And, they, you know, they knew me as Vic's student. And they're like, "Is your student coming up to the show with you? You think he'd want to work?" And that was pretty much it. And they said, "We got this little idea for it." It wasn't nothing permanent. It's like, "We got an idea with throwing a tag team for this tag team tournament called the Altar Boys." With this other guy, I didn't even know. So I just met the guy at that show and never seen or talked to him again. And after that, the rest is history. They just kept me around.
The Altar Boy gimmick seemed to stick, though, with you. Did you like the gimmick, or what do you think of it?
I didn't like it. I didn't like it, but it stuck because I made a name for myself with it. So kind of had to stick with it. And I struggled so long trying to drop it. Eventually, I just went with Luke by itself, which was so plain Jane, because I didn't have anything else to go with. And then I was trying to think of something to go along with it for the longest time, and Doug Gentry, who worked with Ralph Feinstein at our video, who passed away, bless his soul, he was the one who came up with the idea. He was like, "Man, why don't you just use Hawks? That's badass. Hawks is badass, you know, because my last name is Hawkshurst." So he's like, "Use Hawks."
Right.
I was like, "You know, I thought about that." And he's like, "Yeah, use it. So I said, "You know what, I'll use it." And then I used it, man, and that just kind of stuck and kept going on from there.
You know, back when you were a high flyer in your early days in XPW and everything else, how did you go about, you know, creating your style or, you know, how you were going to work in the ring? Like, where did you, you know, come up with that?
Different guys. I used to watch different guys. Guys like X-Pac, guys like Michaels. I'm not saying, like, I idolize these guys. I'm just saying I my style was simulated to some of those guys.
Right.
So I tried to throw in a little Benoit, a little Kurt Hennig, a little, you know, a little Shawn Michaels, a little X-Pac. Try and throw in a mixture of guys. And I wanted to do more bigger things, but I wasn't big enough to do some of the bigger stuff I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to suplex guys and stuff, but here I was 140 pounds soaking wet. So, you know, I couldn't do German suplexing guys and stuff like that. So, like, I couldn't do the things I wanted to do. But I got so far. I wouldn't say far, but I got a good rub as the Altar Boy character at that size. And I started getting a lot of good bookings with it and making a name for myself. So I kind of didn't push myself in the gym till much later in my career because I didn't feel like I needed to until I started kind of hit that wall, like, well, if I really want to succeed, and after enough people got in my ear and told me, "Dude, you need to hit the gym, you need to hit the gym, you need to hit the gym." And I also wanted to change my character, too, so I morphed more into myself. You know, I got away from the Altar Boy thing, and I turned more into the real life me. And I also started hitting gym and look, you know, and I had to look to back it up. So I wasn't just the loudmouth kid anymore. I had to look to back it up, so. One of the things, just time, man. Just time. It's one. I'm lucky that I found it and I adapted. I won't say adapted because, like I said, it's myself. So I'm just lucky that I'm fortunate enough to be myself in wrestling.
XPW, you know, I had different reputations depending on who you talked to, and obviously a place where, you know, they had a lot of big names in there, and you know, with the DVD distribution, definitely got a lot of exposure. What was your feelings on the XPW product or being part of it?
Well, that was the biggest thing. Man, I was excited because of the DVD exposure. They were the only company outside of WWE and like ECW to have DVD exposure in stores. So that was huge for me. And then I was on TV different places. So it was you know, it was definitely a big step for me, who had only been in the business a couple years at that point, to get that big of a start and, you know, making some money, because I was getting paid in XPW. I wasn't making, you know, $20, $50, $40. I was getting paid. So, yeah, I was going out making a few hundred dollars, so making $300 to $500 a show, which is a big deal for a guy who's only been in the business 2 or 3 years. You know, it's a huge deal.
All right.
So, you know, that was big for me, and you know, like the exposure that came with it, and then the indie bookings that also came off it. So, I was lucky, man. I was fortunate. But at the same time, XPW was a crock of shit. I mean, they had its good points and it had its bad. It had, you know, the guys like Kevin Kleinrock and GQ Money, and they had some good workers, and especially towards the end when it started changing. But they, you know, but before that, the first couple of years, it was fucking terrible. Oh, excuse me. It was terrible. Terrible, man.
Awesome.
With all the hardcore crap and, you know, they didn't make sense. They had some, you know, they were just bringing in any ex-ECW guy or ex-WCW guy, and they just had a bad product until, like, Kevin and GQ really started booking and focusing more on the wrestling and bringing in guys like Chris Hamrick and Danny Doran and Super Crazy and Psychosis and, you know, the guys who could really go. So, and
right.
Johnny Storm, so Little Guido, you know, instead of getting away from the guys like Axel Rotten and, you know, those jerk-offs.
Right. I read during the time that you were there too that I hadn't seen it, but they did some form of like a death match tournament thing that they actually put you in. You were just saying about the hardcore. What was your thoughts and feelings on all that?
I didn't want to do it. It was my second show. They actually made me hardcore champion after that, but I didn't want to do it at all. They called me and asked me if I wanted to do it because they needed guys for it, and I was super nervous about it. And I called Vic, and Vic was really, really ticked off about it because he felt disrespected that they called me instead of calling him, being that I was his student, you know, and they called me and asked me this. He's like, oh, they should have called me and asked my permission if I would let you do that because, you know, I'm the one responsible for it. You're my guy. I'm the one who brought you into business, this and that, which he's 100% right. So I was like, well, I didn't know what to do. He wasn't mad at me. He was mad at them. So he called me on the phone with them, chewed them out, and then said, look, you know, if you want to do it, I think it's, you know, going to get some good exposure for you. It's going to say something about you. I can teach you how to protect yourself in it because I never did nothing like that. I was scared to death. I'll be honest with you. I didn't hit with a light tube or a thumbtack or anything, so I didn't know about any of that. I was just, you know, you see it and you know it hurts, and I didn't know if I could handle all that. So Vic's like, look, I can teach you how to protect yourself, and, you know, we'll go through some things. But, you know, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. And I was more nervous that I was going to lose my spot with the company. So I was like, well, you know, he's like, well, if you do it, you know you're doing them a favor, so they're going to kind of owe you. So that's right. What I did, man. I did it, and I ended up doing pretty well at it. And I tried to mix in some psychology into the death matches to make it not just a death match, have it make some sense. And instead of just going out there and cracking each other over the head with some things. And I worked Supreme, and God bless Supreme, man. He took care of me. You know, he could have went out there and just beat the hell out of me, but he didn't. I mean, he used to beat the hell out of a lot of people. So that was kind of his job in XPW. So he didn't do it with me, man. He took care of me and, you know, taught me some things. I learned a lot from Supreme. And I lucked out, man. Then they put the hardcore title on me, and I didn't want to run with it long once I had it. I told him I wanted to get rid of it because I didn't like having it. I didn't want to be known as a hardcore wrestler when I was really trying to focus on my wrestling and getting better at wrestling. So, you know, once you start doing those hardcore matches, you get that stigma and you get stuck with those hardcore matches, and people just want to start booking you hardcore, hardcore, hardcore. And I didn't want none of it. I didn't want anything to do with that.
Yeah. Did they accept it like that? Because, as you said, I have had a bunch of people on, and they said, you know,
they,
once
they
start
were pissed off,
some
well,
money.
Know,
yeah.
The only one that was pissed off was Rob Black. He was a scumbag, and I didn't care what Rob thought. I mean, by that time, like I was actually bringing the upship to CCW at the same time because I didn't like Rob at all. I had no respect for Rob. He was a complete scumbag. He didn't care about his guys. He knew nothing about wrestling business. He didn't care about anybody's safety. And I got that. So and then CZW had contacted me and made me offer because people were jumping ship going back and forth. So, at the time I was talking with them. But before I even jumped ship, XPW folded.
When you were mentioning CZW and stuff, you know, leading into that, there was the whole Messiah situation. And you had to have been, like, right around, like, you know, when that was going on.
No, I wasn't. I had nothing to do with it. That was before my time.
Oh, was it?
So okay. I wasn't even there. I wasn't there for any of that.
Okay. So then CZW came calling after that then?
Right, right. Yeah, it took probably about another year after XPW died that I went to CZW. I went straight from XPW to NWA Wildside. I started working for Bill Barons down there in Georgia and doing a lot of work with Bill. And then from there, CZW called me from up from there, and I was doing, you know, a few things. I was doing CZW. I was doing Wildside. I was doing some stuff in Florida, some small stuff, and going and doing some lucha shows in California for Chaos and Steven Altamirano, a.k.a. Cyanide. So that was good. So, you know, just had a lot of things going on after that. But nothing in the New Orleans area.
Okay. How did you feel about working for Zandig, and how was it, you know, working for ZZW?
I was excited at first, but when I got there, some of the guys I was friends with, some of the guys I knew, some of the guys I didn't know, and some of the guys I got along with real well. I mean, I went in straight away, and, you know, I made friends with, like, DJ Hyde and Drew Gulak and guys that are still around today, and Nick Burke and Nick Gage, and there was a lot of guys that treated me real good. But then there was, like, a few guys that were, you like, Zandig and his son and this idiot Adam Flash, they treated me like I was, you know, I always like an outsider, like that XPW guy, like, you know, like that
right.
Indies dude, come on, you know. So like, and they buried me my first few matches in, and you know, I had to work with Adam Flash, who sucks ass. So I couldn't, you know, I'd rather wrestle a broomstick than wrestle him. I had better matches with it. So they buried me my first few shows in, and then I told Zandig that I wanted to leave because I wasn't happy, and I went to PWU.
Okay. Now I was over there with Trent and Johnny and everything. What was your time like in PWU?
I was cool with Trent and Johnny, and I never had a problem with either one, especially Trent. Man, I was always buddies with Trent. Trent was, you know, good guy to me, always wanted to work together. We never actually worked together. We worked together in a single Ring of Honor match, scramble match, cage match once, but we never really got to officially work together. He always used to say, you know, we need to work together. Demons got the better of him, so and Johnny, I never had an issue with Johnny. Johnny was always respectful to me. He rubbed me wrong because of the way he treated some of my friends that were like students of his. So I didn't like the way that, and you know, I ended up having some words with him over that. But besides that, he never did me anything wrong. And Todd Gordon was always extremely good.
Right.
Because I went from being buried at CZW to being highlighted, you know, into like the main events at PWU. So and being like a top heel at the company. So it was completely different.
Sure. Yeah. When you worked in Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor I've kind of followed and not followed and on and off. There was a period I did stay pretty steady with it. Around what time were you in Ring of Honor?
I don't remember. I was only there for one show at the time. I got brought in for the Scramble Cage. Yeah, in Boston.
Okay.
I don't remember what year it was. And just got a little match. You know, it was like me, Jack Evans, Trent Acid, the Hit Squad, Logan DeVito, Omen Katorga. God, who else was it?
It's Masada in that one.
I don't know. They had a who?
Masada.
Was who? No, Masada was
Masada?
In that one. Fast Eddie.
Yeah,
no,
there.
Masada wasn't.
Okay.
No, Fast Eddie. But they had a ton of guys in it. Pretty good match, you know. I enjoyed it.
So you were more or less just brought in, you know, as part of that match. There was no long-term plan with you in Ring of Honor?
No, that was no long plan. Yeah, there was no long-term plan. It was just brought in for that, and then that was it. Basically, they didn't want to fly me in. You know, I was a flight in, and I'd already established myself, and the guys who wanted to work with the company were driving in from all over. I couldn't afford to drive in, man, not from no New Orleans. You know, the Texas boys were doing it. They were getting carpools together, and that just wasn't for me, man. There was no way I was driving 24 hours, you know, there and back just to go wrestle somewhere. You know, so like not at that point where I'd already made a little bit of a name for myself and I was making money and I was doing all right. So I had kids. Most of these guys don't have kids or anything else. I had a kid. I had, you know, a relationship. So plus I was working a regular job. There was no way I could take off a regular job, you know, 3 or 4 days in a row to go support my wrestling habit.
Sure. You had gotten some tryout, you know, and some involvement with the WWE. What year was that?
I started with WWE in late 2003 and been working for them ever since. So not on the contract, not officially working for him, but I go back, I do a lot with him, I got a good working relationship with him. I really enjoy going up there because, in all honesty, you hear these horror stories, and like I said, I've never been on the contract with him, but I like how they handle things because everything they do is business. It's all business.
Mm-hmm.
You don't deal with these egos on the indies, it's such a different atmosphere when you go up there. It just seems like you're just there to do business, and then you go home. And I enjoy that. I like to go somewhere and get a direction and say, what do you need from me, and do my job, and that's it. If I can put my input in, and they always treat me really well, and, I'm always well-respected when I go up there. And you get to learn from some of the great guys like William Regal and Arn Anderson and Chet Finley, and you get to get in there with these guys and get in the ring with Jamie Noble and roll around, and you learn so much. You don't do that on the indies, Yeah, everybody's out for themselves, so it's I really always enjoy going up there. I'm not saying to kiss ass. I really do enjoy going up there,
right.
Every spot I do. So I learn. I try and leave with some knowledge every.
What have they used you for? Like extra work or dark matches and stuff?
Extra spots, dark matches. I've done extra stuff. I've done I've done Druids for the Undertaker, stuff with Kurt Angle. I mean, I've worked. Got beat up by Bret Hart. Got beat up by Kane. Worked the Big Show. I couldn't tell you how many matches I worked. I worked a ton of people up there. It's always something different. Sometimes I'll just sit there and get paid, which can't beat that either.
Sure. Was there a point that you felt there was interest enough where you were going to be like a regular deal there?
I actually got two offers, and one just wasn't right for me at the time, and one it ended up getting screwed up because of the steroid scandal when Nova got fired and they suspended all the WWE guys. Remember when they suspended all the wrestlers? I got offered a developmental deal and was told that they were going to send me down to Florida. Was it Florida at the time? I don't know. It couldn't have been Florida. It must have been OVW. I don't remember. It was a while ago. I worked Chuck Palumbo in Dark Knight on a SmackDown show. And they came to me right after, said they were going to pick me up, and Johnny said he was going on vacation for 2 weeks. They'd get with Nova tomorrow, and he would have all the information. But when Johnny got back, we'd, start talking contract and all that stuff. So I called Nova, and Nova was like, yeah, I'm aware of it, blah, 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 we're picking you up. So when Johnny gets back in town from vacation a couple weeks, he'll contact you and start going over contract stuff and whatever. So within that two-week period, that's when that steroid scandal broke. Nova got fired. A bunch of guys got suspended. I emailed Johnny. He said we'd be in touch, and that was pretty much the end of that. Like I said, I think I just got lost in the wind with it. And then back last year in February, they sent me to Tampa to go to the training camp down there for a couple of days. So I went and did that.
Oh, that's good. Obviously still a window pretty open with the training camp and those type of things, right?
Oh, yeah. I try to stay in good vibes and stay in front of him as much as I can. And I talk to him a lot, and we stay in contact a lot. I'm always trying. And I helped him with guys, too. My Wildcat guys and other guys, if I can recommend guys to him, I do. Like I said, I got a good working relationship with him, and I hope I always keep it. And my deal is I never do something that I think they won't like. I'm never going to send them. If they call me and they say, hey, we're in the South and we need two guys, we're short two guys, or we need two guys for the show or four guys, I'm never going to say, hey, well, I know two people. I'm going to send them what I think they're looking for. I'm not going to just say, I'll send you two guys because they're my friends, because they're wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not working hard and they're, not in shape and they don't have that, drive, then I'm not going to send two random guys who just go wrestle on the weekend in front of WWE to go make, asses in front of them. So and I think they know that, and that's one of the things that I think really benefits me, because I'd rather tell them no, I don't have anything, than send them something where they'd be disappointed in.
Yeah. You also wrestled the Wrestling Society X project that they did MTV and stuff. What was that experience like?
It was awesome. Got paid really well. It was a fun experience. Hung out in Hollywood for a couple of weeks, partied hard, and. I say party hard. I never got into drugs or anything. I'll drink very occasionally. I didn't start drinking until I was 28. But you're just hanging out, partying Hollywood, man. Hanging out, partying, chilling with celebrities, and going sightseeing and hanging out with your friends and getting paid to do it and getting paid well. So it was one of the best times of my life. I wish I would have stuck it out. I wish I would have stayed around.
Yeah. I mean, from, you know, a fan's perspective watching it, it was definitely different than anything you've ever seen because they cut it so, you know, had to clip it together
it
and really
terrible.
Condense it.
Yeah, it was cut terrible. It was just cut into spots. It was just move after move. There was no selling. There were, you know, you'd powerbomb a guy, you know, and then they'd show you picking him up and shooting him off the ropes the next thing, and they didn't even show the guy on the ground selling a powerbomb or something. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, was there any thoughts or talks to actually make it more legitimate, or was it just kind of misdirected?
That's not
all
what
the
MTV
time?
Wanted. It was just misdirected. Yeah. And it's not because of Kevin. It was MTV. It was MTV's, you know, that's what they wanted. They didn't understand the wrestling concept. They just thought,
right.
At the time, well, wrestling's cool, you know, this cool project, you know, and they added all the stupid special effects like the lightning and, you know, stupid stuff like that, like get your nose fake and, you know, you're giving a guy something off the top rope and then they flip the camera to the 16-year-old girl in the front row. You know, I mean, you missed a move. It's just, it was the MTV concept was retarded.
You actually did stunt work in movies as well.
I do stunt work. I didn't did.
You
I do.
Do. Huh. All right. how did you get into doing, you know, stunt work to begin with?
From at WSX actually. Vampiro was about to film a movie in Mexico and down in Guadalajara, and he was there with some of his producers and stuff, and they approached me and said, hey, we're going to be doing this, and we like your look. Would you like to come down to Mexico and shoot this movie? And I would have been a dummy if I would have said no, so I told him yeah, and went down to Mexico. Eventually, at first I thought they were full of crap, but then a couple months later went by, they called me and said, hey, we're ready to start filming. You know, are you open on these days? I said, yep. They flew me down to Mexico, got in from there, wanted to get in more work, so I started, every time I was going to L.A., I started making more and more connections and talking to people, and somebody set me up with somebody in Louisiana. I went and had lunch with him, and he said, you know, I was trying to get into acting, and he said, hey, you know, you ever thought about doing stunt work? And I was like, I'd love to do stunt work, I just don't know how to do it. He says, well, they're having a tryout for about 25 people this weekend, and if you want to come, I'll take you. This guy was a high-profile actor, so he's like, I'll take you with me. So I said, okay, sure, I'll go. And then out of the 20 guys, I was the only guy they kept. And it was pretty cool. So I started training every week with these group of guys and broke into business from there. And then the first official movie I did to get my SAG card was Wrong Side of Town with Batista and Rob Van Dam.
Oh, okay. That was cool. What was your favorite project that you worked on?
Homefront, the Jason Statham movie that came out over the Thanksgiving holidays. Had a big part in that, and it wasn't a huge part of the movie, but it was a big part for me because I worked for like 6 weeks and I made a ton of money. I had a really big stunt in the movie. I had probably the biggest stunt in the movie. You know, I got blasted off the porch with a shotgun and, you know, down a flight of stairs. So, you know, and I got a little FaceTime. I played assassin trying to kill Jason Statham. So I did this, and it was a good crew, man. It's always the crew you work with. If you work with a good crew, it makes it that much time, you know, that time on the show is that much better because you spend – those days are long, man, 12 to 14-hour days every day. So, and we had a really good cast. We was in with a good group of guys, and we were just hanging out for 12 to 14. I mean, working, but, you know, it's better when you're with your friends because you're laughing, you're joking, you're having a good time. Everybody's there to, get each other's back. And it's a big difference than when you just go into work somewhere you don't want to be or if you're working with somebody you don't like. And I'm not saying I don't like what I do. I love what I do, but it's just, you know how it is. Like, there's certain people you work with, you're like, yeah, okay, I'm working. There's certain people you're like, yeah, I can't wait to work with him because I love this guy.
Right.
You know, so it's, yeah. that was cool, man.
That's cool. Now, you started up your training facility or however you want to say it, but that's back in New Orleans, right?
Right, yeah, it's Wildcat Sports down in New Orleans, not too far from the Superdome.
Now, like you said, when you came up, you really didn't have anywhere to go and stuff. Now giving these people a place to go, you know, did it get a lot of buzz and actually, you know, pick up
really
quick?
We're getting some buzz, man. We're really picking up. You still deal with it. I find wrestling's crazy, man. It's like anything. It's just like going to the gym, dude. Nobody wants to work hard. You get these people to come in, they tell you for an hour. They'll sit there and cry and say, this is my life dream. It's all I ever want to do. You know, I'm going to be such a superstar. I can't believe I'm... You know, and then they're like, oh, but I ain't got no money. I can't pay for training. But they got some new Jordans on. They got the latest Call of Duty that came out. And, well, they, you know,
right.
They start sweating. Or they do sign up and they start sweating. And they're like, I can't do this. This is hard. They think they're going to be Kane, bro. They think they're going to come in there the first day and throw their hands down. A pirate's going to come out the post. It's crazy. people think, man. Seriously. Right. It drives me crazy.
But,
man. Nobody wants to work hard. Nobody, you know, they just want to be handed everything. It's really sad. It's sad, man. I hate seeing it because, you know, I'm so passionate. We got a couple really passionate guys. You know, guys like Matt Lanty and Buku Dao and Carlos Socorro, man, these guys have been with me since day one. And they're so passionate, and they stuck it out, and they work hard, and they're getting good opportunities. And it's just, I love seeing these guys. You know, they'll do anything. They'll train extra. Like, I got to kick these guys out the ring. You know, and some people, like, they come in there, and they just lazy, and it's like, it's modern America, bro. Modern America. Everybody wants something for nothing.
Well, I mean, I think that's great to, you know, bring something back to where you're from, you know, knowing that there wasn't anything there and, you know, taking it the hard way or whatever they got to do to actually, you know, prove themselves and, you know, step their game up to actually belong. Yeah, I think that's great
exactly.
to be able to offer something like that. So,
yeah, that's my game plan, man. I definitely make the guys work hard, you know. It's not one of the schools where you come in and you start taking bumps the first day. Nah, I get you in shape for you believe in. Looking somewhat like a wrestler. I'm not saying you can't be a wrestler if you don't have the body, but I'm just saying you at least have to work towards them. You know, you're not going to come in, you're not going to be some, you know, scrawny punk or some big, heavy set fat kid who you know, can't run the ropes without getting winded and get in the ring and wrestle. It don't work that way because then you're putting everybody else at safety. You know, you're jeopardizing somebody else's life. So I definitely make them do a lot of conditioning and stuff before they start. And I make them earn it, you know, the same way I had to, though. Same time,
yeah.
You know, and I tell them, but they appreciate it. You know, my guys appreciate it. The ones who leave don't, but the ones who stay, and I will give them a shirt off my back. I'll give them opportunity before I'll take opportunity. You know, because it's,
sure.
that's how they're like my kids. I mean, I'm not that much older than them, but they're like my kids. So I'm very protective of them. I make sure, you know, they give them the best things I can, and you know, like I said, I'll do anything I can for the kids because I love them and I know they work hard. They want it, so. You know, and I remember what – I'm still like that. So I remember what it was like when I was starting. I would have did anything at all costs, you know, to start training. And that's what I did. That's why I slept in my car, and that's why I drove across country.
Yeah, that's great. Extreme Rising, when that started up, a lot of the big, big buzz around it was the promos you were putting out and the straight heat you were putting on Shane Douglas. How did that whole
right.
thing come about?
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a gimmick. It wasn't a work. I hate Shane Douglas, and I used to be a major fan of his. And after working with him at XPW and a few other places and going to TNA, and he was at TNA when I was there, and it was like such a letdown seeing what a scumbag he was and how much of a hypocrite he was. So before Extreme Rising started, I cut the promos and just put them on the internet. So then, you know, and Extreme Rising started up, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to show up here. I'm gonna come after him, man. Like, you know, I'm gonna go call this son of a bitch out. And everybody thought I was joking, bro. And that's what I did. And then next thing you know, Kevin was involved, and Kevin's like, dude, we got to get you on here. You know, and then a lot of people thought I was talking crap at first. They didn't think I would back myself up, number one. And then they also didn't back me on what I was saying. They thought, you know, who are you? You're just nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy's.
You there?
Yeah, yeah. You got me?
Yeah, yeah, I got you now.
Hello?
Yep.
Sorry about that. I said, then he went out there and he crapped the bed, and everybody was like, man, everything Luke Hawk said was true. You know? So it was like I started picking up a following from there, and that was it. And I guess, you know, we're where we're at today. I'm the
yeah.
champion, although they don't want to recognize me as the champion.
Yeah, because
I got the belt.
Because I gotta tell you, I mean, they started up that Fed, and you know, whatever they were doing to try to push it, it looked like the biggest angle they were running going into it was you and Shane Douglas, and wasn't really an angle they were pushing. So, you know, pretty impressive that you created a bigger angle for the company that they had.
Yep, it was all built off passion, man. So that was my, you know, that's what I wanted. It was something I wanted, something. And I really had no interest in working with the guy because I knew he couldn't work. Like, I knew, like, he's a big fat slob and there's nothing he can do. So, you know, I wanted to be like, this guy's been cutting the same promo for 10 years now, 15 years, and, you know, whoever buys the hype is still is an idiot. I'm like, this guy's a hypocrite, this guy's this, he's, you know, he doesn't care. He's just looking for money to get his next drug fix.
Yeah. Then there was a lot of other controversy and stuff going on in the locker room, you know, that hit the internet and stuff with someone took a picture of Sabu, and then Just Incredible was the next night, and
yeah, well, some,
you
Sabu,
know, just a lot.
Just Incredible took a picture of Sabu, and I put the picture up with Just Incredible because he took a picture of Sabu. All
right. I mean, what was your thoughts on the whole situation?
He's a scumbag. I mean, it's my here's my look on it. You got 2,000 plus fans, great opportunity, making money. People could have, you know, you could have just ran with the ball. But these guys couldn't keep their stuff together for one night to go put on a show when, you know, knowing all these guys aren't booking, getting bookings out the wazoo, you know. They need money.
Right.
They need bookings. So they get this great opportunity. And what do? You know, get all doped up and pass out like morons, you know, and ruin it for everybody else. So,
sure.
Yeah, I got no tolerance for that, dude. I absolutely... You know, like I said, my parents, my mom was a bad drug addict, you know, alcoholic. You know, the way I grew up, man, I have absolutely no tolerance for that. And no pity,
right.
No tolerance. It's not a disease. You know what I'm saying? That if it's a disease, it's a self-chosen disease. You know, cancer is a disease. You know, AIDS, hepatitis, whatever, you know, diabetes, that's a disease. You know,
right.
You can't control, you can control some of those things. You can control AIDS. But you know, I'm saying, like, you can't control getting cancer. You can control that you're going to go out, you know, stick a needle in your arm or get all coked up or take a bunch of pills or drink till you pass out. That's your choice. That just means you're a screw-up. There's no excuse for that.
Right. And, you know, on top of that, I mean, these are guys that, you know, as a big ECW fan yourself, you've seen a lot of these guys when you were hoping to come up. Now the other fans are paying to see them. And, I mean, it's the young guys. Well, you know, you're not young, but guys like you that have to kind of pick up the ball and run with it because these guys,
exactly.
You know.
Right. And
fleeting.
still, at the same time, don't get the credit for it, you know.
Right.
Those guys are still going to be the guys who get the credit because supposedly that's who the people are there to see.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, and Just Incredible had the nerve to, like, call me a nobody. You know, I say, who are you? You're nobody. I say, yeah, but you are somebody because he's like, I was in WWE, I was in TNA, I was in this, I was in that. Well, you work at Olive Garden now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
What you got to show for? What's that mean? You're still a drug addict loser. What's that got to do with anything? You know, that's great that you were on some TV, but you were moron because you pissed away everything you had.
Sure. Now, recently, too, they had this, as you were mentioning, they had to cancel the show. I think they had building problems from what I heard.
Yeah.
And then they
it
were...
It's a bad thing. It, you're right. It's just, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's like the company hasn't been able to get enough steam behind. Like, it's good, and then they have a couple setbacks, which I really feel. I mean, I'm a straight shooter, I would tell you. If I thought it was out of their control, you know, if I thought it was something they were, you know, if I thought it was ticket sales or something like that, I would say, look, the company's just... ran by idiots or something. It's just not, I don't think it's the case, man. I think you just, you know, had a couple unlucky draw events the first time with the state of weather, you know, and that's debatable. But at the same time, it's, you got to look at it. If you're driving from, you know, 5 to 6 to 8 hours away, do you want to drive in that weather? I don't, you know, so
right.
You got workers coming in for carpooling. I don't want to drive 8 hours in the snow like that in these storms and, you know, a flight coming in, risking being canceled and everything. I think it was smarter for them to cancel that Pittsburgh show because of that.
Sure.
At the same time, and then they had the incident with the building. And that's all legit. The building wasn't even ready for the December show. So, and it just, you know, it's slowly being put back together. Hopefully it's ready for the April show. They're assuring us that it will be. And, you know, thank God that Roger's a good guy, man. He came through, the owner of the arena, he came through and, you know, took care of everybody for the past show. So it's just, it's one of the things, like, you know, they're trying to catch a break. If they catch a break, I think it has the potential to do really big things. And hopefully the fans stay behind it and hopefully things work out. You know, but I can't tell you they will. I can't tell you they won't. So as long as they treat me good and they're respectful to me and, you know, and the guys there are working hard and Shane Douglas is nowhere around, then I'll be there.
Right. And then ECWA was able to, you know, give guys, well, they gave fans more or less entry to their event if they had tickets to Extreme Rising, and then also, you know, put the title match on the show with you and Stevie Richards, I believe.
Right.
How did that go down? Because then later on they said it wasn't a title, and, you know.
Right. Well, it was a title match. I don't care what they say. I'm not giving up the belt. That's what they want. They Steve O'Neil, to his credit, is saying that we screwed the fans, which, you know, hey, did the Extreme Rising fans get screwed? Absolutely. They should have seen that match. But at the same time, the match was announced as a title match. It's on video as a title match. It's something that was, you know, recorded. It was put out. You know, Steve O'Neil was there. He asked me what the hell after. He was pissed off. And was like, hey, that's it. You know, this is a done deal. You can't fight it. I mean, what are you going to do, take him to court over it? You know, I mean, in real life, the case happened years ago. I seen somebody post something, I think it was in Georgia, and the court said, you know, this proof, he won the belt, you know. So if somebody else wants the belt, then they got to beat him for it. So
right.
I'm not giving up the belt. I'm the champ. I'll be defending everywhere I go. I don't care what they say. I'm going to take it over to England in a few weeks and defend it against Fergal McDevitt, old Princess McDevitt.
Nice. So you also had a big program going with Matt Hardy. And Matt's another guy who had, you know, a lot of struggles over the years and stuff, and some internet videos that didn't make him look like, you know, the Matt Hardy of old. What was your feelings on working Matt?
Matt had a lot of demons. I've known Matt for a long time. And we had a falling out, and, you know, I legit hurt him. I legit pushed him off the top rope, and it was an accident. You know, I pushed him. But, like, you know, did I mean for him to crack his head on the floor? No, you know what I'm saying? But it happened. So one thing led to another, you know, and it got heated up. And, you know, we knew what it was. And, again, the key there was passion. He had the passion. I had the passion. You know, it was real life. We ran with it. It made great wrestling. He knew it. I knew it. Most people aren't, you know, they take things too personal. Matt knew to make business out of it. You know, and I knew that to make business out of it. And, it, you know, even because it was a real-life situation. When you can turn business into real life, I mean real life into business, then it has so much more real feeling to it, you know, where people can get into it, where sometimes you can tell when guys are working an angle or working this and that, you know, but when you know two guys don't get along, well, you know a real story, I mean, take the edge in that thing, right? Everybody knew that was real.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was believable. You take the Daniel Bryan thing that's going on now and how he's been held down and this and that, and look how over, you know, look how over he is now, because, you know, the people are too smart now. You can't get by on trying to, you know, quote-unquote work everybody. You know, people are too smart. They know what's going on. They know the system. They see that, you know, they see what the system likes and what it doesn't like and what's working and what's not working. So if they feel it, you know, if they feel like you need to get, you know, they need to get behind a product, they will. And that's the thing with me and Matt, was people got behind it. Just the same way, I won't say the same way they got behind Daniel Bryan, because obviously that's on a much bigger scale. But at the same time, it was real life. So it ended up working, man, and it worked great. And I enjoyed every minute of it, because I love going into a match full of passion. You know, that means something. There's a big difference in going into somewhere where it's just another match and somewhere we're going into where you're like, hey, you know, this is going to be awesome. This is some real life, could be potential to be some historic stuff, you know?
Yep. Also want to talk a little bit about your transformation as you, you know, you decided you really got into the gym and completely changed shape from, you know, what you used to look like and what you look like now. Obviously became extremely dedicated in what you're doing. How did you, you know, go into that?
Hard work, man. I mean, people, the first thing I get all the time, and I'm not afraid to say it, is steroids. That's all people say. Steroids, steroids, steroids. I can tell you right now, I can pass any steroid test for you. Second off, look at my pictures throughout the years. I didn't blow up overnight. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't 150 pounds last month, and I'm 200 pounds this month. It didn't work like that. And, you know, like, it's something that I started working out, really getting heavily involved into it after the hurricane. And I'm constantly going. I'm not to where I want to be yet. And it takes an extremely long time. But I kill myself But again, I found passion for the gym. I didn't know much about the gym before. I didn't know anything about working out. I wasn't familiar with it. I couldn't go in there and do a proper exercise. So once I started working out with different guys and learning things, I really started falling in love with it. And I would slack off. I would start up for a couple of months, quit for a couple of months, start up for a couple of months, quit for a couple of months. But these last probably 3 to 4 years, I've been really consistent. And the only time I miss the gym is if I'm, you know, on the road where I just absolutely have no time. But otherwise, now I try and get in the gym 6 to 7 days a week. I mean, it's my life, dude. I love going to the gym. I mean, it's extremely, extremely, extremely big part of my life. And I do it with my son a lot now, too. So which is even better for me because I get to share the wrestling with my son and I get to, you know, share the working out with my son, which I enjoy because it's just bonding time for me and him.
All right. I mean, you don't have to get too specific, but you say 6-7 days a week in the gym. What, say, you know, in a 7-day period, what would you do each day?
I do my back and biceps one day. I do chest and triceps one day. I do shoulders one day. I do legs one day, and then I start over again.
Okay. So you're more or less doing
like that.
What are you doing twice in a week, more or less?
Whatever. There's no specific method to my madness. I just, like I said, I start off with chest and tries. Next day I'll do back and biceps. Next day I'll do shoulders. Next day I'll do legs. Next day, and then I'll restart my set again. Then, you know, so it's about every 4 days because you to grow. I was always told by some really big guys and bodybuilders that you need 3 days of rest. So whatever you work out, like if you work out chest and tries on a Monday, I don't do them on a specific day. I just do it on whatever day it falls on, what's next on my schedule. So, but if you do chest and tries on a Monday, then you have to get Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday a rest, and then you can do it again on Friday. So which means, you know, Tuesday you do your back and buys, and then, you know, so like that. So, and like I said, if I miss a few days because I'm on the road and I can't get to the gym or whatever, I just start off with when I left off last. You know, if I miss shoulders and shoulders were next, I'll go do shoulders and then do legs the next day. And then, you know, just like that.
You got the chance to train with C.T. Fletcher.
Yeah. C.T.'s the boss.
Yeah. How did that come about?
C.T.'s the man, man. I was a big fan of his from the internet videos, obviously. A lot of people are, right? So he's got a huge following. And I go out to L.A. a lot, and I do a lot of work in L.A., so I would train. I was going to Golds and stuff like that when I was out there because I had never heard of Metroflex. So once I heard of it, I was like, man, I got to go. This gym is badass. That's the gym I want to work out at, you know? So that's like my style, you know, the crap talking, you know, just being loud and wild. And I said, that's me. I want to go over there. So I went over there and I talked to some of the guys from over there and they actually made a couple buddies over there. And CT wasn't there the first time I went, but they told him about me. So I sent him a message and I said, hey, I'm a fan of yours. I wanted to work out with you while I was there. And I'd love to shoot some wrestling stuff with you. And he's a big wrestling fan. He actually dabbled in wrestling a little bit in the early 90s. And he messaged me back right away and was like, yeah, man, we got to get together. I'd love to do that. You know, let's hook up. And so they set me up with his manager and everything. And CT hit me back. But then he's like, get with my manager and check dates. When next time you come out here, make sure I'm open and, you know, we'll hook up. So we did that. And, actually, the first time I was supposed to do it with him, it got canceled because the show I was supposed to be on out there got canceled. So I ended up not going to L.A. I had to reschedule, and the whole time he was hitting me up, like, Luke, you better get your ass out here. You know, we got to shoot this video. We got to do this. We got this. So it was real cool, man. So, like, he was just as pumped up to do it as I was, you know. So I went out there and hit it up with him. We became friends, and we keep in touch. And then we're going to do some more stuff together eventually, probably next time I'm out there. Hopefully he's out there at the same time because he's, like, really blown up. You know, this guy he's not an overnight sensation because he's, you know, been in the business a long time. He's, like they say, the strongest guy you never heard of. But he's really blown up in the last couple of years. And, I mean, this guy's getting flown everywhere now to open up gyms and sign autographs and work out, you know, do personal training with people and everything else. So much love to CT and the Metroflex family, though. They got a good crew there. I also worked out with Tanya Moore, who's an IFBB pro. She used to wrestle in the early 90s as well. This chick is bad, man. When I talk about bad, she is the baddest chick I've met. She makes China look like a sissy. So,
wow.
You know, much respect to her, too.
Yeah, CT, I must have came, yeah, I definitely came in late on that, but, you know, saw from the internet videos that other people are posting. I mean, I love that dude's passion and his energy and just fire behind it.
Yeah, man. I mean, he died 3 times. You know what I'm saying? They brought him back to life. He was not even supposed to have open heart surgery. He's not even supposed to be working out. And, I mean, what he hit 225 for like 400 reps a couple weeks ago.
I mean, just some of the stuff he says really just hits home and, you know, resonates. Because, you know, a lot of people do want to take the easy way out. They do want to, you know, 30-minute this, 30-minute that, and it's all bullshit. You gotta work
hard.
Yeah,
it is. It's exactly what it is, dude. It's crap, dude. Everybody thinks, so. You could take a steroid or you could just go to the gym for a month and, you know, do a little bit of this. And, you know, once they start not seeing results, they quit because they don't put the work in. They don't understand how hard it is and how much of a dedication. It's a lifestyle. It's not just, you know, it's not just go to the gym. It is a lifestyle. It's just like wrestling. If you want to be successful in wrestling, you have to change your lifestyle and adapt it to wrestling. That's it. Bottom line.
Yeah.
What were some of the favorite matches you've had over the years?
Oh, man.
You had to pick a few.
Let's see. One of my favorites was definitely the Vic Grimes Lil Guido at Hostile Takeover in Philly. That was like my first, like, you know, like, hey, not just that match was just, we stole the show that show. So for me to be so young in my career and steal the show on like a big show like that, which meant something back then, because, you know, it was the first XPW show in Philly, and there were so many mixed feelings about it. The Philly organizations hated us coming in. XPW had the buzz around it. So it was cool to go there and steal the show. Also, another one of my favorite matches was a match I had with Vic. I just flew home, and I had flew back to California when I was living out there. I flew home for a couple of days and then flew back to California, and I was late getting the show, and I had to work Vic, and we ended up going out. I broke Vic's nose in the match, but it was like an awesome 20-minute match. You know, and for me just to have these great matches so young in my career, I mean, obviously I was being carried by these guys, but, you know, those are two big matches that I really enjoy. I had a good match the other night with one of my students, Matt Lansing. Me and Matt, man, Matt's a hoss. Me and this dude always have really good matches. He's a hard hitter. He's a very believable, solid worker, very smart, gets the business. So I enjoy working with him. And let's see, what other matches? Stevie, my Matt Hardy matches. Like, me and Matt had a phenomenal match at Wildcat, which is definitely one of the top matches in my career. It just meant so much. And, you know, the second match me and Stevie had in Philadelphia was for the title tournament. It wasn't like the best match in the world, but it just the way the people were behind it and the way the crowd reacted to us is, you know, that's a big thing.
Sure.
And the Shamrock Cup. I mean, I can't forget the Shamrock Cup. Winning the Shamrock Cup was one of the highlights. And also another highlight, like I said, another thing wasn't the biggest match in my career, but it was a huge honor, was being on the Jerry Lynn retirement show. I mean, Jerry, I've known Jerry for a long time. I got a lot of respect for Jerry, you know, and Jerry called me up and he said, look, I won't do my show without you. So to have a guy like Jerry Lynn, out of all the people he's known and worked and been with and traveled with and roomed with, and for him to call me up of all people and say, I'm not doing my show without you, you know, it's a tremendous, tremendous respect.
Who are some people on the indies that you'd like to work that you haven't gotten a chance to yet?
I'd like to work Papa Don, man. I like to work, even though they're my boys, I'd like to work Papa Don, Homicide. I like to work Jay Briley. I want to work, I just really started seeing him, but Taka Watanabe from New Japan is living in the States for like the next year. I'd like to do some stuff with him. I'm looking forward to working Sabu in a couple weeks. That's going to be nice. Indies. I want to work Zebra Kid over in England. He's the best talent in England, hands down. I'm working McDevitt. You know, that's all right. I'm not really too stoked about it. I'm, you know, it's a big match, but, you know, it's not like I'm a huge fan of his. Who else? There's a lot of good guys, man. There's a lot of good guys on the indie scene. I'm trying to think who. Yeah, that's a good question. I just worked with Bestia a few times. I'd like to work El Hijo de Rey Mysterio. I think me and him would have a really good match. I don't know. Throw out some names to me. I'll tell you. I think AJ Styles is overrated. I like to work AJ, so I can school AJ.
Oh, wow. Okay. Trying to think who else is out there. You work Chris Hero?
I never work Chris Hero. I wouldn't mind working Chris Hero. He's very talented.
I know. You know, he just hit the indies again, and, big name a lot of people are talking about. Trying to think. Offhand, I can't think of anything offhand. But, yeah, I mean, there's, I'm sure, a lot of dream matches out there, you know, fans would love to see. And what are your goals at this point? I mean, you've accomplished so much from, you know, movies to, you know, wrestling everywhere. And what are your goals at this point?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, man. So, I'm making a living doing what I love doing. So I'm happy. Obviously, I'd like to expand. Of course, I want to make more money, you know. Not that I'm making bad money now. I just like to make more money. You know, I like to be able to financially secure my family, you know, where I can put stuff away for my kids and, you know, do all the good stuff where I, you know, buy him a car when he gets out of high school, you know, and pay for his college and do all that stuff. You know, like, you know, I'm not rich. I'm making a decent living, a good living doing what I do now. But I'm not rich. So
sure.
I like to, you know, for a family of two kids and an old lady, you know, I do all right. So, but like I said, I'd like to expand Wildcat. I'd like to grow my school into more stuff and get more students and run more shows. I'm running 6 shows a year right now. I'd like to run more. It's hard. It's hard because with my indie schedule and the movie stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, I make a lot of money in the movies, a lot of money. And I'm not bragging, I'm just saying that. A lot more than I do when I wrestle. So the money's night and day different. I make decent money in wrestling, but I make extremely good money on the movies. So, and I actually lose out on a lot of movies because of wrestling. So, like, I'll get a call to go do a movie. Like, last week when I was supposed to go to Philly for Extreme Rising, I got a call the day before I left, and somebody wanted me to stay home and go do a movie. And I couldn't do it because I had already had the plane ticket booked for Extreme Rising and all that stuff, and the show ended up getting canceled. But, you know, I would have made a good chunk of change. So, but obviously I chose wrestling because wrestling is my passion. So, I just want to be able to juggle both, man. I want to do wrestling. I want to do my movie stuff and obviously grow as big as I can with both of them. Long term, I'd like to be, you know, I'd like to grow Wildcat as big as I can, keep that around. I like to work with WWE as like an agent or something, you know, as a, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a trainer or an agent down the line.
Yeah, well, those are definitely good goals and surely something you want to land in and be able to, you know, take care of everything you need to in the long run. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's about all I got. Is there anything else you want to put out there before?
Follow me on Twitter, LukeHawks504, same as Instagram. My Facebook is maxed out, but you can follow me on Facebook, and you can also add my Wildcat Sports page. That's Wildcat, Cat with K-A-T, Sports on Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel, Wildcat Sports on YouTube, which we put out our web episode TV shows for free. So you can get familiar with myself. If you're not already familiar with me, you can also get familiar with the rest of the Wildcat guys. We're a little behind on it, so some of the stuff you see is older, but we have a really good product for free. And it's hard to do on we don't have a big budget at Wildcat, obviously. We're not a multi-million-dollar production company. So we do it, you know, as we go. So, sure. But, you know, it's a free product, and we have some really good wrestling on there with some really good wrestling. So, really good wrestlers with some really good wrestling on there. So definitely check out the Wildcat Sports YouTube and, you know, follow us on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff.
All right. Can you do a drop for the show before I let you out?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Go ahead.
What do you want me to say?
Just whatever, however you want to spin it. Yakuza Kick Radio is the name of the show.
I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
However you want to put it, man.
Just Luke Hawks. All right, you let me know when.
Go ahead.
What's up, guys? This is Luke Hawks. What's up? This is Trey from NOLA's. Excuse me. Do it one more time.
All right.
What's up, guys? This is Luke Hawks. What's up? The Stomper Straight from. What happened? You ready?
Yep.
Tell me when again. I won't screw up this time.
All right, go ahead.
What's up, guys? It's Luke Hawks, the Southern Stomper, straight from the murder capital world, New Orleans, Louisiana, and you're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
Good looking, man. Then also, you got a shoot coming out with our video coming up, huh?
Yeah, man, that's going to be a really good shoot because that was my first one I've ever done, and we easily hit 4 hours. Easily. We could have done more if we were running late and on time. And so, you know, me, I don't bite my tongue either. So it's going to be some sweet stuff. I can't wait till it comes out.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to that. I'll be sure to promote it when it comes out, too, for you. And, look forward to having you on again in the future, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Sorry it took so long.
Nah, no worries, man. I know you're a busy dude.
I try to be.
Yeah, man.
All right, man. Well, if you need anything, give me a holler, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime, Luke, man. Thanks. Have a great night.
Yep. Take care. You too. Bye.
There you go. That was Luke Hawks. That dude is a phenomenal talker. I mean, he knows exactly what he's been through and been around, and he ain't scared to talk about it, and that's the type of dude I like right there. So, very, very happy with how that went, and I'm going to play a track, come back, and, you know, talk a few other things. But, yeah, all right, check this out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take niggas back. You know what I'm saying? Sunday night. West Side Highway. 27th and 12th Avenue. The Notorious, home of the chooks, home of the robbery, home of the body, the illest club in New York, the tunnel, yo, let's take it back to the tunnel, where the hood to run upon you, for the chooks, son, as soon as they play shook once, the walls from Brooklyn, always roll deep, who shot ya, somebody getting rocked to sleep, security make you take your shims off in the winter, had to walk through the metal detectors before you enter, when you get inside, might be a homicide, with that New York hip hop, somebody might get shot, this is where they snatch shoes, raiders and splash you, flex screaming out in the club, don't let them gas you, niggas taking pictures of money, you know, cash rooms, bitches give a head in the unisex bathroom, this is hell where the criminals dwell, half the goons in the club just came home from jail, other half couldn't come cause they couldn't make bail, it's cold in the west side, it ain't hard to tell, it's time.
Let's take you back.
Take you back to the tunnel.
Let's take you way, way back. Let's take you back.
Take you back to the tunnel.
Let's take you way, way back.
Posted up, goons ferocious, youth cold as fuck. Those who dream about scheming, we woke them up. My four green niggas was born to squeeze triggers. My queen regime was at the bar deep chilling. The tunnel was the place for all the street niggas. You know it's real, you could go in there and see people you know from jail. Home at last, hold a stack of dough ahead. Moment of silence, Big L was always there. And Chris Lottie ran the tunnel, he was the man. I seen Diddy by the bar out and shut it down. Please believe, Free and Nitty didn't fuck around. I walked the crowd with Tim's on because my style is New York to the fullest, we don't bow. All these dudes who want the crown are fucking clowns. The tunnel is proof, street niggas run this town.
Let's take you back.
Take you back to the tunnel.
Let's take you way, way back. Let's take you back.
Take you back to the tunnel.
Let's take you way, way back.
Thinking niggas at the tunnels that I used to eat. Soon as you step foot on that cobblestone street, and this is the same spot where hype shot belly. You could get popped, and I'm getting shot in your belly. Come through something like your ass is bad. You get choked up, spin out in a plastic bag. This the grimiest club in the whole city. I'm talking sick of kids, murderers, and YPD. West side is 27 down the block from the project. Just walk into the tunnel, you get shot up and carjacked. I party with killers, raping and lifers. If it wasn't for the bitches, you would think it was righteous. That's back when I never smiled a lot. Was on my New York state of mind, shit around the clock. And it wasn't just niggas from the NYC. It was CTDCVAPANCLIMDNJ at the tunnel.
Let's take you back.
Take you back to the tunnel.
Let's take you way, way back.
Tunnel.
Let's take you back.
Take you back to the tunnel.
Stinky Meg and Fresh Roast Star, black ski mask, hoodies and crowbars. Hip-hop purists, prestige, lyrical flow guards. Grew up in a tunnel, we came here to expose y'all to the most dangerous nightclub in the whole world. Unemployed ex-con, stuck with no job. Chain snatching, stick-up killers who came to go rob. Pocket knife, gym star, box cutters to blow y'all. Drug trafficking, coke pills and hydro jars. Fly diva, hood rat, dime bitches with no draws. Finger wigs, braids and shades, giving out blowjobs. Wrapped around the corner, the tunnel line was so long. Skip everybody, Brooklyn niggas was so strong. The ice grill era, face fighting get sold on. Punch you in your face and give you a fucking nose job. These bougie clubs and day parties control y'all. The real recognize the real, we don't even know y'all.
Let's take you back, take you back to the top. Let's take you way, way back.
Yeah, there you go. Some more Papoose. And that shit is off of, Jesus Christ, what the hell is it called? Ah, man, I just got this shit today. Let me see. God damn it. It's Cigar or something. For some reason, the title of the mixtape just completely slipped my mind. And let me see. I'm going to go down the list here. Just want to put this mixtape over right quick. Cigar Society, it's called. New Papoose mixtape called Cigar Society. It's like 9 tracks. Not a big mixtape, but this shit is fucking crazy. It's got a track with Cassidy on there. He's got that track with Onyx and Cormega on there. Like, the fucking shit is crazy. So go get that shit. Mixtape Torrents. You know, so that whole shit is crazy. Listen to that. Update on last week's little deal. First off, I'm not going to be reviewing CZW today. I know that, you know, usually the week after the CZW show I review it, but honestly, didn't get to watch it yet. And I don't want to say didn't get to as if I didn't have an opportunity. I have it, haven't watched it yet. So I will be getting to that next week. That'll be what I'm talking about, is the CZW show. So I look forward to that. Another update on, you know, what I was talking about last week. It said the fucking fish tank glass came to be broken and shit. It literally, if you didn't hear, it literally came to me in a box the size of a coffee table, but too tall to be a coffee table. And it's just, you know, the glass piece that goes on top of the tank. You know what I mean? It's not a whole fucking tank. It's just the glass piece that goes on top of the tank that you put the light on. So, you know, the one I got was crazy cloudy, and I had, like, the calcium buildup. You couldn't get off of it, crazy cloudy. So I had, you know, I ordered a new one. And when it came last week, it came in this box the size of a coffee table, but too tall to be a coffee table. And unwrapped this shit, crazy amount of bubble wrap in there, paper, bubble wrap, all sorts of shit in there. Finally get it unwrapped and open, and that bitch was shattered in like fucking like 70 pieces in the fucking box. So I'm like, this motherfucker. So contacted the, you know, the company, and they got back to me and was like, you know, sorry to hear that. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna have to send this back, and I'm gonna have to you know, go through the whole thing with them again. They're just like, nah, I'm sorry to hear about that, we'll issue a refund. So I'm like, oh shit, good. I throw this big ass box out, throw, you know, the broken shit out, and just said, all right, you know, well, I'll place another order with you guys. You know, I appreciate, you know, the what do you call it, you know, service. And so they send me out the new one or whatever because I ordered it. And I'm actually trying to find, as I'm talking, the website, because I kind of want to give them a shout out on that in case anyone does want to get like fish stuff. And then they sent it back to me, you know, sent the new one to me. And this shit came in a tiny ass box. This came in like a box just a little bit bigger than what the glass is, and a little bit of bubble wrap, but not too much. Fucking crazy, because the other shit was so overly housed, and that shit was shattered. This shit didn't have a scratch on it. Little bit of bubble wrap in a box, just a little bit bigger thing, and the funniest thing about it all, there was not a single fucking sticker on that box that said fragile.
So they could have did any motherfucking thing with that box on the way here. The other one had three Fragile stickers on it, and the bitch was broken in that coffee table box. So anyway, the company's called Tropical Marine Reef, and it's tropicalmarinereef.com. So if you want to go on there, you know, if you got fish and fish tanks and stuff like that, they got a lot of good prices and things like that, you could check them out. Of course, I Amazon a whole lot of other shit, so they might have better shit on Amazon. I'm just saying. Fucking solid company as far as, you know, how they handled our customers and stuff. So shout out to them. My fucking crystal clear glass is chilling on top of that fish tank over there. I got the two fish tanks next to each other. They're 46-gallon bow front tanks. I got African cichlids in the one and South American cichlids in the other. So I got African, South American. So anyway, so there's that. I debuted my running shoes this week. I think I said something about it last week. I got the Reebok Z-Quicks, and I love these fucking things. Jane, I mean, they're fast, real light. They kind of felt like slippers. I mean, like, they were so light, they felt like slippers. But when you ran, you didn't feel the impact of the ground, so just really, really good. The one thing that I will say is, like, the day after running, my calves were sore as shit, which could be a good thing because now my running is working the shit out of my calves. I'll look a little further into it to see if that means something bad, you know. But and if it's too hard, I'm gonna try to put in a big run soon. Put in like a good 10-mile joint and see how I feel after that. I mean, if I feel injured after that, then we have an issue. But they felt awesome running. My lungs is still not completely up to par. I got to give somebody to time my 40-yard dash, man, because when I kick the speed in, man, I'm pretty quick. I have no idea how fast I am. I know back when I wasn't even a runner, we're talking like 15 years ago, up north, someone clocked me at like 4.5. I was running a 40 in 4.5. And I can almost guarantee you I'm faster than that now, like by far. I mean, I don't know. I'm definitely going to look into it and see if, you know, I could get someone to measure it out and do the, you know, clock it for me. But I really don't have a lot of people do that. Man, if I could get my lungs up to speed with my legs, I'll be burning these fucking races up, man. I know as far as the obstacle races, I'm good because the obstacles, I beast on those shits. But, I'm looking forward to all this stuff, and I'm just continuing to just put in work with this, going at it, you know what I mean? And I haven't been able to get to the gym. Friday I'll be able to get back to the gym. Should get the truck back tomorrow, actually be able to get out there to the gym Friday. So I've been putting in some pretty good home workouts in the meantime. You know, I got a couple sets of dumbbells, and I got the battle ropes, and, you know, then just more or less body shit, you know, push-ups and fucking shadow boxing, just whatever else I could do, fucking ab floor workout, whatever. So not the fullest extent of what I want to do. Mentally, I'm fucking driven. I'm definitely, you know, in a mind state where I want to take shit to the next level, but, you know, it came at a kind of bad time. But it's good because, you know, kind of built up my hunger to do so. So, you know, still doing things to keep myself on point. On top of it, I cannot wait to get back to the gym on Friday. So, you know, I'm going to go from there and then just go in. Got the new couple new, you know, workout supplements. Got the 1MR, and it's one of those non-caffeine supplements, so you really don't get like the boost going in. I have another one of those too that's like max reps, and there's a lot of good properties to it. There's a lot of good you know, once you get to working out, there's a lot of good benefits for it, you know, to give you more, I don't even want to say energy, so to speak. It helps your strength through your workouts. And, you know, there's a lot of things in it, you know, the creatines and whatnot that helps you build from what you're doing. But it doesn't give you that boost going in. I actually ended up adding some C4 to it, which I don't think is like a normal recommended thing that they usually tell you don't mix none of those things, but added a little C4 to give me, you know, that before boost and whatever the other one was going to give to me, you know, get that shit to me too. So it was good. I mean, it tasted like a fucking non-chewable vitamin if you chew that shit. And but whatever, it is what it is. You know, a lot of these things, too, if they don't taste good but they do the right thing for you, I don't give a shit because, I mean, when you come from being a fucking alcoholic like I was and stuff, I don't know, I think I'm supposed to say you are, like you always are. I don't fucking know. But anyway, drinking like I was, the type of shit you drink and you do shots and you down shit and just, oh, just chug this nasty shit and then get fucked up, you get used to just doing shit for the benefit of what you're looking to do. So if it comes down to you doing shit for your health or doing shit for, you know, your workout, it's nothing because it's so much more beneficial than whatever buzz you were trying to catch off the other shit. But, so, I mean, you get past that taste thing real easy if you had that background. But, and I also got the NCG Nitro, I think it's called Reloaded now, NCG Nitro Reloaded. Because it kind of went off. It was just the craziest shit they put out, the NCG Nitro. And I tend to think people fucked up with it because it kind of just disappeared. It worked really, really good. You know, and I think people might have fucked up with it or something, or they might have got complaints or letters or some kind of shit. So they put this out after, you know, a little while of being gone. I got to say, I think they downgraded it. Now, I don't think that the formula is necessarily different. I think it feels like everything else is in there that's supposed to be in there. But I think where one scoop would do it before, you would use two scoops now. You know, with any of these pre-workouts, you gotta test it out on a low dose to see what it's going to do to you and then kind of gauge it from there. But next time I'm definitely gonna do two scoops, which I wouldn't have fucked with two scoops of the Nitro before. So which kind of tells me that I think they just made it a weaker, you know, version of the same stuff. So if you just updosed, I think, a little on it, you know, I ain't no fucking doctor, so don't take my shit, you know, for gospel and then get mad at me if you fuck up. But that's on you. I'm just saying what I'm gonna do. I think, you know, updosing on it, you're going to get the same exact feeling as the Nitro was before because it completely feels like the same stuff, but just at a little bit lower. So, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily half, but it definitely doesn't feel quite as potent. But, C4, definitely big, big on that. You know, you definitely want to switch off on things. There's those things. Let me see. What else do I got? Oh, on another NFL note, the Patriots signed fucking Darrell Revis. So they you know, picked him up for big change over there. And, yeah, I mean, that's big money for them. Definitely. To have some, you know, defensive weapon like that, you know, try to bring the ball back to Tom Brady, that's a big, big move. And, you know, he's going to love picking off random Jets quarterbacks all year, you know, playing them twice. That's the move of the day as far as the NFL. You know, two other random animal-related things. I decided I'm going to get a pigeon added to my ducks. This racing pigeon came into my job. He's cool as shit looking. He looks like a little white owl and shit, but he's a pigeon. But he's got like the big ass eyes, and apparently with racing pigeons, what happens is, you know, these people, I guess it's a sport, and people pay for these pigeons, and, you know, some hundreds of dollars, and they send them out from whatever location. They drive a certain distance from their house. They release all these pigeons, and I guess they make bets on who's coming back first. And the pigeons that don't make it to their house, if someone calls them with the band number on it, whatever, they take them back and they kill them because they didn't do what the fuck they were supposed to do. So, you know, it's a shame. And so generally, like, if animal shelters, you know, who know the deal, get one of those pigeons in, they usually send them to a rehab or something along those lines because, you know, it doesn't make any sense to give them back to the person for them to just kill it. So he was one of those guys. But like I said, he's a cool-ass pigeon. I'm going to name him Tyson because fucking Mike Tyson had pigeons, and everyone wants to name a pit bull Tyson or some other shit like this.
And I just figured it would be funny as hell to have a pigeon named Tyson. And I could put him in my ducks, and he'll stay, you know, that pen's all enclosed, and it'd be pretty cool. I just got to wait for the weather to warm up on a regular basis, because this drop into fucking 30s and 20s, there'll just be a dead pigeon in there. So once they're inside for a little while, you got to weather them, you know, get them used to being back outside. And by next winter, then he'll be completely fine outside all the time. But, you know, that's that. Another thing that's, you know, a little bit of a wrestling tie-in is years ago, I had a group of kittens. Now, you know, for those who don't know, which I think everybody who listens to this knows, but I work at an animal shelter and I take care of cats. You know, I you know, work with their temperament. I clean their whole, you know, their cages. I have a roaming area, clean that. You know, I take care of 50-plus cats, and then I know all the cats in the shelter, which is about 150 cats. You know, now I've been there for 13 years almost, and, you know, you name these cats. Obviously, you run out of names pretty quick, and, you know, you start naming things after your interest. So, needless to say, there's been a lot of cats named after wrestlers in my shelter. So we had a group of kittens years ago, and this is probably like 10 years ago now. And there were a group of black kittens. I want to say there were four, something along those lines, three, four, because I know we had added another one to the group. And they were all black kittens. We named them after the blackout. So we had Ruckus, at the time Sabian, Kingston. Joker was another one, but I think Joker was from another litter, and I know Robbie was, and Robbie was actually a girl because that was just what we had there that we matched with it. So Robbie ended up, and this was pre-Chrissy, before there was Chrissy in the blackout. So we, Robbie, just to give you a breakdown of what happened to all these cats, pretty much everybody got adopted. Robbie actually turned up, she had feline AIDS, so she actually ended up getting a home even with the AIDS. So that was cool. Ruckus and Kingston were both adopted by my friend Mike. Since Ruckus came down with health problems and this, and he ended up having to be put to sleep. Kingston, on the other hand, is still around and this and that. Joker and Sabian also got adopted to, you know, separate homes or whatever, and, you know, they did well too, you know. So they got adopted, and like I said, my boy had these two, and the one, unfortunately, had to be put to sleep. His mom passed last year, so now he's going through all sorts of stuff. The house is being sold, this and that. He had no place to go. You know, now he found a place to go, but he can't bring all of his cats. So anyway, long story short, I'm now watching Kingston. So, like, I'm hold on to him for a couple months or whatever. So it was, you know, years later, this cat that I took care of as a kitten, you know, and I'd go over there, watch football with him and shit, and, you know, I'd see him. But it's crazy because now he's in the house. So since last week, I've been dealing with, like, an extra cat in the house, and that's just, you know, a little bit of havoc because, you know, the other cats don't know who the fuck he is. My dog's a jerk-off. She really doesn't like cats, even though she lives with seven cats. You know, that's just random stuff. But yeah, I just figured it'd be semi worth mentioning. Maybe it wasn't, whatever. But because, like I said, the names of the cats over the years that have been named after wrestlers, it's pretty funny when you think about it. There's obviously names that haven't been able to be used, like a Zandig's a little too outlandish. Wife Beater was really kind of off the table. But tremendous amount of cats with wrestler names have gone in and out of the animal shelter there, so pretty interesting. Like I said, I'm going to watch the CZW show over this next week, amongst getting back in the gym and everything else and really focusing in on that. You know, there's some points of it that I'm definitely looking forward to. Like I said, overall, I didn't like the looks of the card, as a lot of people didn't. But I'm going to watch it and give it my honest opinion. Next month, I'll be at this fucking show, so I'll be able to give you a live, and then I'll watch it, you know, on demand or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I'll check it out via that way, too, and give you a full rundown before the show. Or after the show, I should say. Yeah, I think that's everything I got there. I almost think there's something else that I'm completely missing, but, I watched another, said the fucking thing, and I didn't have it queued up because I forgot all about it. Oh, what the fuck. Let me see if I can find it. I watched another Kevin Steen show.
My dad, I think if he, at that point in time, if he could have went back in time, like he was so disgusted with me, I think if he could have went back in time and like not fucked my mom for me to be born, he would have done that. He was so disappointed.
Yeah, so I watched another one of those, and this was with Chuck Taylor. And, you know, definitely a lot more burying of the CZW product, just proving that he just really, really can't get off that whatsoever. It seemed like whatever happened towards the end of the CZW go-around, where he wanted to go to Ring of Honor so bad, and he was pretty much cutting promos, like saying, I hate this company, and more or less expecting them not to use them, but then they would still use the promos anyway. Somewhere in that time was where he got severely offended, and I guess this is where all this butthurt stems from. He just continues to bury the company, you know, consistently. You know, it was pretty good. I mean, Chuck Taylor's an entertaining dude. You know, a pretty entertaining shoot. There's not too much specifics I can really say about it because nothing really popped out that way to me, and I didn't pull any clips from it, so not really the most raving review that I can give, because I'm telling you absolutely nothing, so I'm kind of just mentioning it for the sake of mentioning it, but yeah, I did watch that as well, so there's that. I think that's about all I got. Check out the Sports Den. I'm sure they're talking many, many moves as far as the NFL, you know, trades flying all over the place. So a lot of stuff going on with that. Tomorrow night, definitely check out the return of Thursday night's return of Wrestling Soup. My dude's over there. Definitely check out on, I believe, Saturday is Stern Nation. You can check out my boy Andrew over there doing his thing. And, I think that's about it. Now, I did promise last week that I would play this Jim Florentine thing. So I am going to do that. This is like another half hour on the show, pretty much. This is, like his whole episode. This one was on man caves and how he thinks man caves are ridiculous and completely, just ridiculous and completely uncalled for. And, there's just no reason for it. And, so I'm going to actually play my outro first, and then if you want to hang in and listen to that as well, I think it's hilarious. If you want to check out his show, it's Comedy Metal Midgets. You could check him out doing that. I think some of the rants he goes on is just fucking hilarious. So as I said in the past, it's nothing that I'm trying to steal the guy's material. It's nothing that I'm trying to do anything of that nature. There's no benefit in this for me whatsoever. It's his show. It's Comedy Metal Midgets. You could check it out. I find it entertaining, so that's only my way of passing it along to other people to listen to the show. Find it entertaining, great. You got another half hour or something to listen to, and maybe, you know, hop over to his show, listen to a few of those, because, man, he rants and raves about some shit, and it just, some of his shit just cracks me up. And the man cave one, to me, was fucking hilarious, because he just buried that entire idea. So anyway, check me out next Wednesday. I'll be back, same time, all that. Peace.
There's a cat in the house. Cat in the house. Let's get to the cat in the house.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill 'em all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
These motherfuckers are geniuses.
Keep it up, my nigga.
What the fuck?
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio. And we're taking over.
Tim from Virginia
left a message on butterflyradio.com, said, hey, Jim, you know what would be a good idea for a podcast? How about all these guys that have man caves? And you know what? I never thought about that. And when he said that, I'm like, that's a fucking great idea. These guys that walk around, I got a man cave. And for the last 4 days, I've been fucking tossing and turning. I've been jotting down notes. I've been angry. I've been taking it out of my family because I'm just thinking of these fucking guys that have man caves. And thanks to Tim from Virginia, we are doing this podcast on fucking man caves. Okay? I don't know what happened to this society. I don't know what happened to this generation of men that have to think for them to be a man, to show that they're a man, they got to have a man cave. It's all about man, that word man, because they don't have a fucking set of balls, all right? They gave them up. They're fucking, they don't know, you know, they're completely controlled by their, in their relationship with their wife or their girlfriend. That's why, you know, you hear words like man cave, you know, a place to go hide, or you hear man up, you know, when a guy doesn't do something that's, you know, not like a man, like a real man would do. People go, man up. And then also, hey, let's go to Vegas this weekend. I got my man card for the weekend. Do you really? Yeah, what's on your fucking man card? Why can't you do that every, why can't you be a man every weekend? Why just, yeah, well, I got my man card so I could be a man this weekend. Really? All the other times you can't be a man? Because you're a fucking pussy, that's why. And that's why guys have man caves, because they're a bunch of fucking pussies, all right? They basically married their moms. Okay, so like when they were a kid, right? Mom didn't like the house to be a mess, right? So they gave you that little room, your little playroom, right? So all your toys, your Play-Doh, your trains, your dinosaurs were all in there, right? So what you would do as a little boy, you go in there and play, and you could write, put crayons on the table, on the wall. It didn't matter because that's your playroom. That's okay if you're messy in there. Just don't be messy anywhere else. So if you want to be, you know, you want to do whatever you want in there, that's your playroom, no problem. Just don't bring it into my house. So now these guys grow up. They're basically mama's boys, right? They live with their mom. They go to college. They're in college. They're living in a dorm. So, you know, they're living with like four other guys, so they're just complete slobs, so it doesn't matter. But then when they get out of college, they probably live back with mom for a little while before they get a good job and can start paying rent. And then within like a year or two, they meet a girl, or they probably had the one from college, and then they get married because these guys are a complete disaster. They can't take care of themselves. They're mama's boys. They need a mommy. They need a mommy to take care of them. So basically what they did is they married their moms. Because later in life, mom slash the wife takes over the whole house, but the husband's like, hey, honey, you know, I know you decorated this and you did this for this and you did this, and but, you know, can I just, that little room downstairs, can I make that into my man cave so I can go down there and just do man stuff and put stuff in there that's not acceptable in the house, but I could put it in my own little man cave, which is exactly like his playroom when he was a kid. Really? I could have my own little room? Like when I was a kid when I had a playroom. So instead of Play-Doh, I put up Dallas Cowboy posters, you fucking pussy. Why don't you just tell your wife, look, man, this is, a, you know, I paid a mortgage. I bought the house. I pay most of the bills. It's 50% my house, too, so I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. I mean, you're not going to put a fucking, you know, an AC/DC poster up in the kitchen, but you just go, look, man, this is my house, too. You're not fucking taking over the whole house. How about you be like that? Any guy that has a man cave that has to go hide in a fucking little room to get away from his wife and his kids has got some fucking serious issues in the marriage. Okay, I want to be alone. Then get in your car and fucking drive around the neighborhood. Why don't you do that? Why don't you do that? What do you got? You got to go hide in your little fucking playroom slash man cave? Because your life is miserable? So, but I'm a man. That's the last thing I got. She's got everything else, but I got my man caves. Really? Is that what you got? Yeah, because I could do whatever I want in my man cave. Really? Well, what could you do in your man cave? Well, you know, I could put pictures, I could put posters up. I have this poster of this girl. She's like half naked. It's like a beer poster. And she's like bending over and she's really hot. Yeah? Yeah, so I'm going to hang that in my man cave. You know, because guys, we like girls. And we like half naked hot girls that like beer. So yeah, I'm going to put that in my man cave. Really? What else are you going to put in your man cave? Well, you know, remember that, you know, that famous picture of the dogs when they're all smoking cigars and they're playing poker? Yeah, I'm going to hang that up. Yeah, because that's, you know, that's like, dogs, yeah, and they're smoking cigars and they got drinks on the table, I think, and they're smoking cigars and they're playing poker. That's like, that's a funny picture. No, it's not. Nobody's ever laughed at that, ever. You look at it like, oh, is that the dog? Oh, poker? That's wow, that's weird. And that's it. That's the reaction to it. But yeah, I'm going to hang that in there. And you know what? You know what else I'm going to put in? I'm going to put a dartboard in there because guys, us men, because we're men and we're guys, we like dartboards. We play darts. How about you fucking stick the dart in your eye, motherfucker? Now we might even have a dart tournament. Hey, you want to come to my man cave this weekend and play darts? No. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to your man cave and play darts. You want to come over Friday night and just hang out in my man cave? No. You know why? Because I'm afraid you're going to try to suck my dick in your man cave. That's what goes on in a man cave. It's not a man cave. It's a fucking homo fort. That's right. It's a homo fort. There's a lot of gay stuff that goes on in there. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not putting down the gays. I'm just saying these guys that go, I'm a man, man, man. It's gay. If you're a 42-year-old man and you're putting Dallas Cowboy posters up in your man cave, there's something wrong with you. You have fucking issues. No, but that was great. It was the 94 Super Bowl. I put the poster up. Yeah, because it's, you know, that was my team. Really? That was fucking 20 years ago. Let it go, motherfucker. All right? Stop living in the past. Nobody gives a shit. No, but it was, I remember where I was when they won. Yeah, where were you? Were you sitting between two of your guy friends pretending you were skiing? That's what you were doing. You were jerking off your two guy friends. No, it's just, yeah, I guess Troy Aikman and then Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith, those three. Yeah, because I look at it every once in a while. Yeah, that was a great team. Really? Is that what you do in your man cave? Is that what you do? You think in there? Why don't you fucking shut everything down and shut all the power off and just sit there and think about your life and think about your own fucking thoughts and just sit there and think what went wrong. Why am I stuck in this little room downstairs? My wife's got the rest of the house because I'm a fucking pussy and I got no balls to just, you know, not be, you don't have to be a fucking dick. You just go, hey, no, I don't need my own room. It's just pretty much my house too. If I want to watch the game in the living room, if you don't want to watch it, there's a TV in the bedroom. Maybe there's something we both want to watch. That's cool. I don't need to hide from my wife and kids. I got a huge basement. My wife's like, you want to put, you know, any stuff on the walls? And I go, no, I don't want to. No, you could put, you know, your heavy metal stuff up or your posters or your sports stuff. No, I don't want to. I don't want it to make it look like a sports bar. I'm a fucking, I don't need to put a Willie McCovey poster up. That's my favorite San Francisco Giant player. I like the guy. I don't need to put a poster up to remind me. I know I like him. I got to put a Dan Marino fucking jersey up in a fucking frame. Cause, oh, yeah, that's right, Dan Marino. I know. I watched them for 17 years. I know. I don't need a fucking, oh, there he is. Walk by. Oh, fucking, I put my man. What else is in your man cave, sir? I'm doing this interview. And whenever I do that fucking retarded voice, that's the man cave guy. I'm sure you guys figured it out. Well, what else is in your man cave? Well, you know, like I put my trophies up from Little League. You know, when I was 10, yeah, we came in first place and we won a playoff game. So I put my trophies up. Nobody gives a shit. No, but no, it's a good memory. We had a great team that year. No, you didn't. you didn't have a good team, okay? If you had a good team, you would have been playing in fucking Williamsport in a baseball fucking little kids' World Series. That's what you would have been doing. You didn't have a fucking good team. It just reminds me, I remember when I was 10. Yeah, good for you. Yeah, and you also had your playroom when you were 10, motherfucker. Back to my original point. Now, it's what else you got in your man cave, sir? Well, I got like a bunch of sports bobbleheads. You know, I got Derek Jeter, I got A-Rod, I got Andy Pettit, I got Mariano Rivera. Really? You got a sports bobblehead? That's what you have? You know, the reason the head shakes? It's because they're looking at you going, you're a fucking grown man that has a doll on your shelf that shakes. That's what they're fucking shaking for. That's why they shake their heads. You're fucking 43 years old with a wife and two kids and a mortgage and a fucking good responsible job, and you got fucking bobbleheads, little dolls on your fucking shelf in your man cave. That's why they're shaking. They're shaking. What is wrong with you? Take me down. Give it to your fucking 8-year-old son. He should have bobbleheads, not you. Yeah, we might even get a pool table. Why? How many times are you going to play it? 4? All you're going to do is put your fucking clothes on it. You don't need a pool table. What else you have in your man cave, sir? I got my special chair. It's a recliner for my man cave. Yeah, it's, you know, it's really comfortable, and I got like 2 fucking holes so I could put 2 beers. Not even 1, 2. You know why? And I got a little compartment on the armrest, and I could put the remotes in there. You know why? Because I'm a man, and that's what I do. I drink beer. And I got a holder right there, so I don't even have to get up. I could just relax. And nobody's allowed to sit in my chair because that's my chair in my man cave. So no one's allowed to sit in my chair. No, that's my man chair cave. Is it really? Yeah, and I got a place I could put beers. And you know what else I have right next to my easy chair recliner? Yeah, what do you have right next to it? I got a kegerator. I'm sorry, I don't know what that is, a kegerator. Well, it's a refrigerator. It's a refrigerator with a beer tap on it. You know, so I could just tap the beer and it's already cold. Because, you know, guys, like, we like beer. You know, I'm a man and I'm in my man cave, so I got to do man things. And then, you know, we drink beer. So I got a kegerator right next to my fucking easy chair that, you know, I sit in and I drink beer because I'm a fucking man. Let me tell you something. If you have to prove that you're a man by having a man cave, you're really a pussy. Let me repeat that one more time. If you have to prove that you're a man by having a man cave, you're really a pussy. That's what you are. A man cave means your wife rules the house except that one room. That's it. That's the bottom line. So just put your balls in a jar and put them in a mantle on your man cave. Put them up there next to your trophies and your bobbleheads. And your Dallas Cowboy posters. What else you have in your man cave? Well, I put this one in a little frame. It's the World Series stuff from 1998 when the Yankees played the Braves. I was at Game 3. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares. You're hanging ticket stubs up on your wall. No, but it was a great game. I was there. Yeah, good for you. Who gives a fuck? It was 1998. It was 15 years ago. Get over it. No, it was an amazing game. Scott Brosius hit a fucking double off the wall in the bottom of the eighth. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about that. You tell that story, Scott Brosius wouldn't even care. He wouldn't even remember it. You could see him at a fucking baseball card convention signing autographs or whatever. And you go, hey, Scott, I was at that, you know, the 1998 Game 3 against the Braves at Yankee Stadium. You hit that double off the wall in the eighth. He'd be like, oh, yeah, really? I did? Oh, you don't remember that? No. How could you not remember that? Because it's 15 years ago. I got a life now. You should, too. Get the fuck out of here. Well, my wife, you know, she won't let me put this stuff in the house, around the house, you know, so I got to put it in my man cave. There's a reason your wife doesn't want that stuff hanging on the walls, because it stinks. It's fucking awful. Nobody cares about that stuff. It's not important. It's fucking dumb. Your wife's not being a bitch. Stop calling her a bitch behind her back. She doesn't let me do anything. No, it's fucking awful. Yeah, that's where you want to walk into someone's house and see a fucking bunch of bobbleheads. I like my man. What do you do down in your man cave, sir? Well, I like it. It's, you know, I go down there and I get stuff done. You know, like I could just chill out and, you know, figure out my fantasy football team for the week. I look at stats on my laptop as I play Mumford and Sons in the background. Is that what you do? You play Mumford and Sons while you pick out your fucking fantasy football team? Yeah, you know, and I drink a beer. And I got video games, too, because you never know. And, you know, I also have a lot of gadgets down there because I'm a man and I like gadgets. You know, because men, we like gadgets. Go fuck yourself. Yeah, I got all my video games. I got Wii Golf. So I could just go down there and just chill and play golf on my fucking Wii. How old are you, sir? What does that have to do with it? No, seriously, how old are you? I'm 41, and you're playing Wii? You're playing golf on your fucking Wii? Is that what you're doing? You're playing, yeah, I play Call of Duty. You really? You do? You play Call of Duty, and you're a fucking grown man. Yeah, you know, because that's what guys do. I'm a man. Well, how come you don't play it up in the living room? Yeah, because my wife doesn't like when I play video games. Nobody likes it. Nobody does. What else is in your man cave, sir? I just bought a signed Derek Jeter baseball off of eBay. I'm going to put it in my man cave. Really? Why don't you shove it up? Why don't you stick it in your ass? That's right. That's where it should go. Just get a big glob of fucking lube and work it right into your asshole. That's where that ball belongs. Nothing against Derek Jeter. I like him. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But just you fucking went on eBay and bought a ball that Derek Jeter might have signed that you overpaid for, and you're going to put it in your man cave. That deserves to be stuck up your asshole. No one over 16 should have a man cave. You're 16, 17, 18, that's it. You go in there as a kid, you want to go smoke pot, you bring a girl in there, you try to bang her, you know, you're getting away from your parents because you hate them, you're a teenager. I get it. You want a place to chill, you don't want to deal with them, you play video games, no problem. Not grown men. I got a man cave. Ugh. Our dads didn't have a man cave. What happened, right? Our dads didn't. No, they didn't build a room. They were in the garage. Maybe they were building shit or fixing stuff because, you know, that's what they did. They're like, hey, man, fuck that. You know, we got Mexicans to do that shit now most of the time. So, like, I'm not doing that. But, you know, they went in there and they fucking on the weekends they built shit, but it wasn't a man cave. No, he just went in there and he fucking put the circular saw on and fucking cut wood and fucking yelled and cursed and shit like that and put shit together. That's what he did. He didn't have his own room with a fucking TV and his fucking sports memorabilia on the wall. And his fucking video games. Dad didn't do that. You know why? Because Dad wasn't afraid of Mom. He wasn't afraid. He wasn't a dick, but he wasn't afraid of Mom. He's like, hey, I fucking live here too. I'm not going to be sequestered in a little fucking room downstairs. Yeah. That's how it used to work. I don't need a dartboard to prove that I'm a fucking man. No, but guys, we play darts. I'm going to be in a dart tournament. Go fuck yourself. Really? Is that where you're going to be? You're going to be at a dart tournament? Ugh. What else do you do in your man cave, sir? Well, look, I just go down there. I could play my music as loud as possible, you know. I sometimes crank the Fighting Irish fucking Notre Dame song. Really? Is that what you do? Yeah, I crank it because I'm a big Notre Dame fan. And I got a poster of the movie Rudy on my wall. And I look at for inspiration. Yeah, because every time I watch Rudy, I still cry. Fuck you. One of the most overrated movies ever. Who gives a shit? Yeah, I cried too when I saw it for the first and only time. I wasted 2 hours of this piece of shit. Oh, yeah, a guy undersized isn't going to make the team, but at the end he does, and he gets a fucking sack. Ooh, I just summed up the movie in fucking 4 seconds, 2 hours and 4 seconds. Ooh, yeah, because there's been no other inspirational movies. No, just that one. Yeah, because that's never happened before, an undersized kid that, you know, had long odds to make a team or do whatever, actually made it. Ooh, wow. They like Rudy. Go fuck yourself with Rudy and Notre Dame. That's it. That's part of my man cave. I got ND on the door. Yeah, ND doesn't stand for no dicks, because there's plenty of dicks in that man cave, and they're all getting sucked by another man that has another man cave around the block. That's what they're doing in there, you little homo fort. Because that's what it is. It's a homo fort. Because when you were a kid, remember you had your little fort in the backyard and you put your little sign up, no girls allowed, boys only. Well, that's what your man cave is. Boys only, because we're going to suck each other's dicks in there. That's what we're going to do as we look at our Derek Jeter, as I look at Troy Aikman's ass on the Dallas Cowboy poster. I'm going to suck my friend's dick in my man cave. My wife's not going to suck it because she hates me and I don't like her. So somebody has to. And we're going to do it in my man cave. And I'll wipe the load up with a terrible towel that I got from the Steeler fucking Raven 96 championship game. I took two so I could use one to wipe up the cum. It's inspirational, the Rudy poster on the wall. No, it's not. You want inspiration? Put a picture of Michael J. Fox up there. That's inspirational. All right, inspirational. The guy friggin' got Parkinson's, you know, 20 years ago, never bitched about it, doesn't complain, still works, still married to his wife, still raises 3 kids. That's inspiration. Put a picture of his wife up there, too, that stayed with him for 20 years. That's inspirational. I'll fucking look at that. I mean, just that she stayed with him for 20 years. Look, if my wife got Parkinson's tomorrow, I'd have to leave her. I got nice china that my grandmother left me, antique china. The shit would be broken 2 weeks. I'll be eating off paper plates and fucking paper cups. I don't live like that. I don't like shit fucking dropping on the floor. And that's all she'd be doing. I would take one last parting hand job, because I'm sure that would be pretty good if she had Parkinson's. I don't know how we got on the subject of Michael J. Fox. He has nothing to do with this. That's a man I idolize. Not Rudy. Fuck. What else is in your man cave, sir? This is a long interview. Well, I just got the new AC/DC action figures. Yeah, it's Brian Johnson and Angus Young. Yeah, I'm going to put them in my man cave. Did you really? Really? You're in your 40s and you have action figures? Well, yeah, but it's AC/DC. Yeah, I know. I'm a huge AC/DC fan. I have 32 AC/DC t-shirts. Okay? None of them are hanging on the wall. They're in my fucking closet, and every once in a while I wear one. Okay? But I don't have the AC/DC action figures. I don't. No, but I've got to put them in the man cave right next to my bobbleheads. You don't think there's anything wrong with you being a grown man having a man cave and putting action figures in there? No, because I'm a fan of the band. No, but I understand you're a fan. I got that. AC/DC is one of the best hard rock band of all time. I got absolutely, without a doubt. I'm not doubting you. But you have action figures. You're a grown man with fucking a wife and two kids and a good job. There's something wrong there. Yeah, but it's my man cave and I'm a man, so I could do whatever I want in there. Is that what you could do? Yeah, you want to come? Come on, man. You really got to try. What are you doing Friday night? You want to come over to my man cave? No. Come on. I'd rather hang out with the Taliban in a cave in Afghanistan. Seriously, that's what I'd rather do. I'd rather have a fucking sharp knife to my neck and they're videotaping me yelling shit and fucking Arab and saying they're going to cut my head off because I'm an American. That's what I'd rather do on a Friday night. Be worried that I'm going to get decapitated than hang out in your fucking man cave and look at a Derek Jeter bobblehead, a fucking AC/DC action figure, a Rudy poster, and a fucking Dallas Cowboy poster as you're playing Wii on your golf, looking at your fantasy football stats next to your fucking kegerator and your fucking stupid easy chair, your recliner that holds two beers and your remotes. That's what I'd rather be doing, getting ready to have my head fucking cut off and held up and shown to my family. That's what I think of your fucking man cave / homo fort. I think I covered everything. I think that was a good ending. Yes, it was. So, that is it for this week. Thank you.